Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 9th, 2009, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet and the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I am Scott Long. And,
Scott, I'm sorry.
You're going to interrupt me already?
I don't think I told you it was okay to speak.
Oh!
Because I'm pretty sure after Apes, I own you now. And
somebody,
since I own you...
somebody has grown banana-sized cojones.
Banana-sized. Oh, that would be ugly.
After sucking out on me in last night's Apes event, trying to pretend that he was a super stud player.
I could afford it, though. I could afford to suck out on you last night. I had enough chips.
Yeah, but it has nothing to do with skill, buddy. So, if you want to pwn me, or however you pronounce that stupid thing that people say, then you're going to have to actually outplay me and not get lucky.
Hey, is that the first time I've ever knocked you out of a tournament like that? Or Apes, I mean?
I don't know. It might be.
Yeah, I think it
sounds like something that's probably happened before, but maybe not.
You've knocked me out? I can't remember. I know I've got knocked out by one of you guys. I just can't remember. I don't think I've ever knocked any of you guys out before.
Well, there's a first time for everything.
I felt pretty good.
Yeah. And I don't know whether this is a first time thing. I mean, I'm sure somebody will correct me if it's not. But Poker Geek, man, back-to-back titles, baby.
Man, that's just incredible. You know, and
back-to-back
I
bananas. That's a long banana.
I'm pretty sure I had a chance to knock him out before he got that huge chip lead when he was at my table earlier.
But you didn't suck out on him.
And I didn't suck out on him. Or he sucked out on me. Or I don't know. I can't remember. But I'm pretty sure I had him down to like nothing. Or someone at our table did, and he won and then went on a tear. He just got hit in the face and played really well. And, man, back-to-back bananas. You know, you do it once, and they might say you're lucky. You do it twice, and you're pretty damn good.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, back-to-back bananas for Poker Geek, back-to-back final tables for you, buddy.
Oh, my God.
Dude. And I was asleep by 9:30. So it was good. Good night all around.
I can't believe you went to bed by 9:30. That's awesome.
Actually, I didn't. I watched TV for a little bit, but I was asleep early.
I gotta tell you, man, if I died in my sleep after that, Apes, I'd have been a happy man. I mean, really, I mean, the Yankees won the first game of their series that day. Earlier in the day, I won enough money at the cash games to be able to buy into our main event. I knock you out, I make the final table, and I even put my much more distance between me and you in the Player of the Year race.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not a lot of points that you have to get ahead of me. I think I have 0 still this year, so...
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring up that painful reminder.
No, that's all right. It's just, you know, I'm kind of wiping this Apes off the memory card.
Okay. And, You're looking ahead.
I'm looking ahead. Yeah. I'm in deep training for the Apes 5 events coming. Last night I went into this, Chris. I really did. I went into this with a strategy.
Uh-huh.
We had 3,000 starting chips, which, you know, sometimes Apes haven't had that. We'll try to rectify that in the Apes 5. But we had 3,000 chips, and I went in with a strategy. It had nothing to do with the fact that you ended up on my table, which was hilarious.
I know.
And right next to me. But I was going to be kind of aggressive and a little bit crazy early on to kind of establish an image as somebody that was not going to fold or was going to raise a lot, and try to get folks into a position where they loosened up a little bit. Because when the blinds get big, which is what always happens on these PokerStars tournaments, you know, that level that jumps, and all of a sudden you wake up and you're like, oh my God,
yeah,
we're all stacked.
Yeah.
Then I could take advantage of it. It's exactly what happened. I wake up with 3 wheel cards, and I'm like, all right, and I get into a raising war with you, and you suck out of me. So again, poker has no skill. It all comes down to luck.
You know,
might as well just go out and buy Powerball tickets.
There were a couple hands, too, where I could feel that. I knew when it folded around to you, and I had 3-6 or 3-8, and you had an 8. I said, this is earlier. I said, I know he's going to raise here, and I'm going to re-raise, and he's going to suck out on me on this hand. And sure enough, that's what happened, like twice in a row. So the so the time that I knocked you out, I said, I don't care. I'm taking this one to the end because I'm tired of folding after, like, Fitz Street when he catches perfect, and I brick after having a perfect starting three. So I was just determined to knock you out of that tournament, man. I'm sorry. I had to do it.
All right. Well, once again, congratulations to Poker Geek, man. I'm sure I have your address here somewhere, so I will have to get another banana-size box up and a second monkey. Wow. They're probably going to breed there at up in Minnesota. Which is fine, because then maybe they'll get out and they'll, chew all the Vikings shreds.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. Mail it right away so they can finish up the Twins first. And then move on to the Vikings if they have to.
All right, we'll do that. We'll overnight it.
You talked about moving ahead, right? So we're talking about Apes event, Heads Up No Limit on November 11th. Now, here's the thing.
I'm psyched about this one.
Now, here's the thing. You know how whenever we play an event that I'm just, like, not looking forward to, I make the final table in cash. And so now I'm looking forward to this one. I know I'm going to go out, like, in the first match.
And you'll go on the first match in the free roll to some Brazilian, I'm sure, right?
Oh, that's right. There's actually a free roll for this, too. That's
going to
be fun.
Yes. Can you imagine the pain of that?
Oh, my God. Well, it's 9 o'clock. The actual event is 9 o'clock Eastern time on PokerStars. Our password is AnnieUp, all one word. You can go to AnnieUpMagazine.com/AIPS, and the free roll is October 28th, right? Same time.
Yep. And the real event is November 11th, Veterans Day.
Veterans Day, yep, absolutely. So what a way. Going heads up, mano a mano, just like a veteran would do on the battlefield. So pretty cool.
Well, you know, Chris, I've always wanted to do this.
Do a poker show with me?
Well, no, I never really wanted to do that, but, you know, I haven't found a way to get out of it after those 5 years.
5 years.
But no, you know, here in Florida, poker rooms are open 12 hours a day, you know, except for the Indian ones. So I've always wanted to go at open and stay all the way to close. I mean, 12 hours isn't a marathon session of all in poker. I'm sure I've played 12-hour sessions out in Vegas before, so it's not that big of a deal, but it's just the fact that that's the most you can play here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a little badge of honor. So Sunday, the Packers weren't playing. Laura was out of town, and Tampa Bay Downs, the room nearest my house, was giving away $599 every half hour to the high hand all day long.
That's awesome.
So I'm like, what better thing for me to do than take my Antioch Magazine proofs, go over there, and be a degenerate for 12 hours and try to win $599 somehow. So I did that, and I tell you, Chris, it was an insane 12 hours of play. I, of course, lost money, which, you know, going in, you're going to have to. Unless you get hit lucky and hit that $599.
Right.
But I won, not one, Chris, not two, not three, but 4 tickets to Wednesday Satellite for the big Halloween.
How did you do
4
that?
4 tickets!
How did you do that?
It was crazy. I mean, here's the thing. They do a thing now where the first 5 flushes to win in any multi-table tournament get a Satellite ticket, right?
Wow.
So you think first 5 flushes over, you know, 5-6 tables, right? Go pretty quick, right?
Yeah.
We were down to 15 left, Chris.
Oh, my God.
And I won the second of them.
Holy cow. Oh.
Can you imagine that tournament going that long and only 3 people winning with flushes, including myself already? So I already had the one. I won a second one. I sold that. I actually bought another one for $10 because the going rate is usually $20 for these things that are $30. And then the very last night of the hand, or hand of the night, night of the hand, that's pretty funny.
Night of the hand. That sounds like a Rob Zombie movie.
Yes, exactly. They do this thing where they throw a satellite ticket in the pot on every table. So at 12:20, we're playing the last hand. I get dealt 8-6. I'm like, all right, it's the last hand I'm going to play. Flop comes 8-6-3, holds up. Boom, another satellite ticket.
Oh, man. That is highly unlikely.
Yeah, it was crazy. It actually didn't work out. I went over Wednesday. I didn't win the satellite. But traded one of my satellite tickets for a Saturday satellite, so I'm still alive, baby. And sold the other two, so, you know. But crazy. But, you know, here's the thing. We talked about the $5.99 bonus, right? And yeah. we talked, what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago about whether promotions change the games, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, obviously, this is a $5.99 for the highest hand of the half hour. So, it does cause people to play some hands differently, right?
Right.
I, of course, forgot this. And I had a hand, we were playing No Limit, and I had the Jack 10 of Hearts, Chris. All right?
Sweet hand.
Very sweet, very sweet. And, of course, you know, everybody's going for the $5.99 bonus. So there's not a lot of raising, which is perfect for my game.
Yep.
So I limp in with this hand. I probably should have raised, but, you know, I limp in. Flop comes, Jack, 10, 7, the 7 is of Hearts.
Wow.
Good flop, all right?
That's sweet.
You know, obviously, you said before, when you play with Jack 10, you want the straight. You don't want to go for a pair or even two pair. But, you know, this, you know, I could be up against 8-9, right?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going to take a flyer. So I bet a fairly decent bet, pot-sized bet. I get called. The turn comes the 9 of Hearts now, Chris.
Wow.
The 9 of Hearts.
Yes, hence my wow. I understand the levity of this situation. This is a big card for you.
All right, so I still have my top two, and now I've got a flush draw. Not only that, Chris, but I'm sure you've deduced, I have a straight flush draw.
Yes.
And a straight flush has a pretty high chance of winning the high hand for the half hour.
You are correct, sir.
Thank you, thank you. Now, where were you while I was in the middle of this hand?
Oh, I was probably working on the magazine like you should have
probably,
been.
Probably, probably, yes, probably. So I push out another big bet.
Don't.
My opponent folds. I win the hand, and then I did exactly what you just did. I'm like, don't.
Yeah, you don't need to ask if he misplayed the hand.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there weren't a lot of cards that were going to hurt me, right?
Right.
And you know, if I just checked and he checked behind, and then I hit that lucky eight, then that's 599 clams in my pocket.
Hey, let me ask you this: do you bet big there on the turn?
Not big, but, you know, more than I probably about a half pot, a little bit more than a half pot.
Well,
I mean,
bad.
Enough to get the guy out.
Well, let me ask you this. What if the guy has you covered and he shoves there? Do you call?
No, I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, okay. I just want to make sure, because all I'm saying is that if the guy has an eight and he has a straight and he shoves.
Yeah, he has a straight already, right. Yeah,
yeah. I just didn't know if you call a shove there. I guess you do, because you have any jack, any ten, any heart, and the eight, maybe the any heart, and then the eight of hearts, too. So, okay.
And I didn't have a lot behind either, so it wasn't like, you know, yeah. This is a 1-1 table where you're buying for 60. You know, it was kind of a brainless poker, I like to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I had another 60 in my wallet just burning, waiting to get out there in the action. but yeah, so, you know, here's a situation where I should have played it differently. Both probably win the pot, too. I probably could get more money out of the guy, too, even if I didn't hit one of my cards.
Yeah, if it was one of those things where you had pocket nines and you flopped a nine on a really dangerous board, I don't fault you for betting out and not trying to check to hit quads, because you really want to win the pot. You want to protect your hand. But in this case, I mean, you got top two and about a billion redraws. Yeah, I don't think I would have bet at all, or at least I would have bet a little bit instead of half the pot. But,
yeah.
You know, your blood gets pumping, you get excited, you know. You know,
yeah.
You got four satellite tickets burning in a hole in your pocket, you know. Things can happen.
All right, well, you know, one of the I took a little break from the cash games to play two tournaments there. Didn't do, you know, the one, obviously, I won the satellite tickets. We had the final table, didn't get any money. Boom! Gone. The other one, I went out pretty quickly. But the first tournament, I thought it's kind of an interesting thing they're doing there, and I want to talk a little bit about it, as well as a very interesting tournament that just happened at the Commerce, but... first, the tournament they're over there, they do it like on Saturday nights, and now it's a $20 buy-in with five optional $10 rebuys, Chris.
Wow.
All right, so you buy in for $20, you get, I think it's 1,000 in chips or maybe 2,000. You can do the dealer add-on for $5 and get another 1,000. All right, and then they give you five little rebuy chips. And at any point during the game, the first hour, first three levels, regardless of your chip stack, you can cash in any one or all of those chips.
So basically, you could spend $75
right off the bat.
Right off the bat, yeah, okay.
Or you can wait till you get booted out and just buy one chip in, or you can buy two chips in. So I think it's a little more elaborate than a normal rebuy tournament, obviously.
Yeah.
And the strategy is different, because in a rebuy tournament, you got to wait until, you know, you get below a chip stack. And so it's kind of like that the thing the World Series did this year. I think that little
that
triple chance kind of thing. Except this is quad
Quad chance.
Quintuple chance. Something like that, right?
Yeah.
But all right, here's the thing I want to talk about, though. The room also allows re-entry into tournaments in the first three levels.
Holy cow.
So if you go broke, you can go after the tournament stand and buy back in as a brand new player.
Wow.
All right, so what some people, this is a good debate that broached out, and I'm interested what you think and what our listeners think. Let's say you go all in, you're busted. Would you rather just turn those five rebuy chips in, get up and walk away, and re-enter for $20 and obviously do the add-on and get 3,000 chips, or pay turn two of your chips in for $20 for 2,000 chips?
Huh. Well, you get the add-on if you buy in as a person coming in new, right? So that's 3,000 chips. So it's only 1,000 more.
Essentially, wow. You're getting that third 1,000 for a $5 discount. If you're willing to put $25 in. Now, of course, if you just do the rebuy, you could just put $10 in if you want.
Right. Now, let me ask you this, too. When you come in as a regular person again, do you get the five optional rebuys back?
You get a new set of five. You don't get the five that you had before.
Yeah, that's what I mean, a new set of five.
Right.
Huh. Yeah, I would do the $5 discount. I think. If I'm willing to go that distance, I'm going to do the $5 discount.
Right. And a lot of people, I think, at the table have done that. And the interesting thing is the rebuys all go straight to the prize pool, whereas if you're re-entry, you're paying a second rake.
Oh.
Which doesn't really matter to you as a chip stack, of course.
Right.
But you're putting more prize money in the prize pool by doing the rebuy thing.
Wow, that's weird.
So I tried to make that case to somebody because I did go out early in this thing, and rather than do the re-entry, I just rebought $10 for an extra chip and then ran that up into a nice chip stack that took me to the final table. So I saved myself $15 by doing it that way.
Wow. How many chips did you get? You get 1,000 for every rebuy chip?
1,000 for every rebuy, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. That's interesting. Yeah, I guess if I'm willing to go the distance, I would probably... Yeah, I think I'd like five chances at it with 1,000 chips, I guess. But, wow, you're starting in such a hole at that point. It's almost better to take them all at once then. But you only did it for $10. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I guess that was my philosophy. Is I'll do 10, and if I can triple up, which happens a lot in these tournaments, you know, 1,000 at that point, $1,000 bet, 1,000-unit bet isn't that big. You triple up, now all of a sudden you got that 3,000 in chips already for the $10.
Yeah.
And if I go out again, then I peel another 10 off. And then, you know, obviously, I mean, you're bleeding yourself. If you're willing to put all 50 in, you're better off getting the 5,000 and having a healthy stack that you can push people around with. But.
And, you know, of course you're asking the wrong person because I don't play rebuys, so.
Well, of course, the other consideration, too, is the prize pool. It's surprising to me how many people in this tournament, if they go out and on a bad beat, too, mind you. Let's say they have ace-king, and they push all in against somebody with 9-6 or something. Somebody spikes a 6.
Yeah.
They get huffy and puffy and get up and storm away, leaving their five rebuy chips, and I'm rebuying and not re-entering.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God, how can you do that?
Oh, man.
You got at least peel one more $10 off and take another shot at getting this Thunderhead's money back, you know.
Thunderhead.
But the thing is, you have to consider the prize pool doesn't get very big. I mean, in this tournament, I think they had somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 entries, and I don't know how many rebuys, but the total prize pool ended up only being about $1,000. So, right. And it paid down three. So, so these people that went the whole way and put $75 in almost had to, you know, if they finished third, they won $20.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's hard to estimate when you're sitting at the table because you don't know how many people are rebuying and stuff.
Exactly. You have no idea what the price pool is going to be until later.
Very interesting. Interesting. But more interesting, Chris, I think, is the Iron Man tournament that just concluded at the Commerce a couple weeks ago. I saw this in an ad when I was flipping through an inferior magazine to ours. And I'm like, you know, this is an amazing idea. And here was the deal. No breaks during the entire tournament, Chris.
Wow.
Shuffle up and deal to you're the winner, no break schedule. Now,
that's
they did
cool.
They did trot out food three times, or they scheduled to trot out food three times. Now, this thing went on for 4 days. I guess you were going to have to, like, you know, eat your arm or something after that. But so they brought food around. Obviously, you had to either get one of Dr. Frank's pee bags or, you know, actually get up and miss a couple hands if you wanted to,
yeah,
you know, tell a bad beat story at the urinal. but I thought it was a pretty interesting idea. And the thing went on 19 hours and 21 minutes, Chris. And also, they do not allow deals. So you can't get to a point where you chop. You got to play the thing all the way to the end.
I have a feeling that Barry Greenstein had a hand in this.
You would think, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when he was on the show talking about that way, way back when, and he was saying how, you know, these young guys are whining and everything, and he would love to get into an Iron Man contest with one of them, and there you go. I bet he had something to do with it. That is cool.
You know, I forgot to write down the guy who won, but he really raved about this tournament, obviously, because he won a lot of money. But 19 hours and 21 minutes without a break, that's... That's an interesting tournament. Really tests you.
I mean, think about it. If you started at noon, you're basically getting done at 7 in the morning the next day. That's just 7:30. That's just crazy. With no break. That is just crazy. But I like it. I like it.
I do. I think breaks soften people up.
and you like people who are calloused and tough,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Well, I got a lot of calluses from doing a lot of housekeeping, so we might as well move on to that.
All right, yeah, we got a lot on the housekeeping list today.
Yeah.
I guess I'll start since I brought this up.
Yeah, this one's pretty funny.
Because apparently I've invented a new word. I've changed the tilde to squiggly, and it's catching on, Chris. I saw some shirts on Cafe Press, you know.
Cafe Press shirts.
Long live the squiggly. And but of course, you know, our math heavy listenership was very quick and flooded our email box to let us know that the little squiggle, which is also a tilde, means about. It's really not a tilde. You can't make the actual double squiggly, which I'm calling it now, and I'm trademarking that, by the way, on the computer. So they use a tilde to mean about or approximately, if you'd like to be wordy.
I thought squiggly was on Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah, but you know, that's so long ago that people have kind of forgotten his trademarks lapsed. I checked.
He checked on the. So what is it, like the statute of limitations end on being a squiggly for 7 years, and then after that someone else picks it up? Now the other thing too is the at sign, the A with a circle around it, also means about.
Well, according to you, according to me and the rest of the forum, none of us have ever heard that before. So.
Oh yeah, it means about or around.
About or around?
You think I'm faking this? You think I'm making this up?
I don't know. Obviously, I don't know anything because I didn't know the squiggly means about. So I'm not going to say you're wrong. I've just never seen it before. And
well, that's what I do. I like to invent things to throw you guys off. That's what I'm here for. Hey, we got another possible show on in the works coming up.
Yeah, Dr. Frank came up with this idea.
Yeah, he said that he thinks that people will be interested in knowing a little more about us, me and you, that being that. And we're going to have an Ask Scott and Chris show.
And yeah, I mean, I don't know what else we have, and we've buried our souls on the show.
I figured we have. I mean,
What else is there out there that people don't know about us? But Dr. Frank seems to think so. So, but, you know, I don't know. I get behind all these behind-the-scenes shows on VH1 and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So we'll put it out there. We'll put something up on the forum and solicit some questions, and we'll try to find a suitable host, whether it's Mr. Faso or Dr. Frank or somebody. And, you know, if we get enough interest, maybe we can do something like this.
I think it'll be fun. We'll do it in the studio and have a good time.
Yeah, and maybe I'll ask something about you that I don't know.
Oh, no. You know everything.
Yeah, I'll have to search really hard. I'll have to come up with
like
something
what?
That...
Like, what makes me such an argumentative ass?
Maybe, yes. But I don't know if we have enough time for that, because I'm sure that's a long,
detailed explanation there, I think.
Boy-type situation that, you know, maybe we'll have to invite today's guest, Dr. Stephen Bloomfield, the psychologist, come on and help you with. But interesting. All right, we also, you remember our good old friends at podcastawards.com. And I hesitate to say friends, because even though we are perennially bridesmaids over there, we have yet to win.
I know.
We have yet to win.
I know.
Haven't got to do the little march down the aisle to the song on YouTube.
God.
But they're back open again at podcastawards.com, and you know, hey, we're gluttons for punishment, so we're gonna try to win this thing once again. So steer your browser, in fact, steer all your browsers to podcastawards.com and nominate us right now. They're just taking nominations now. Go ahead and nominate us on everything, even the gardening podcast.
Yeah, I've been known to grow a few weeds in the back.
You grow a lot of stuff, actually. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you say at the top of the show that I grew a set of bananas.
But yes, I don't know when nominations cut off, so what you probably should do is just push pause on your iPod right now, go to your browser and nominate, and then come back. We'll be here.
Yeah, go ahead. We'll wait. We're
not going anywhere. And nominate us for all those awards, and then hopefully, of course, we'll keep our streak alive, at least being nominated, and then we'll rain the INEP Nation hell down on the podcast awards and try to win this thing this year.
All right, we got one last item. Of course, it's our cruise reminder. How could we go through a show without reminding our good listeners about our cruise? If you want to come with us to Cozumel on the Royal Caribbean, you better call Mary Kolb at 727-733-3498. And guess what? We've added a $350 Antioch Poker Tour event. Pretty exciting.
It's going to be a good one. I will see whether I can make it through second level this time. If Faso suck out on me, or you suck out on me, because it seems like the only way I lose in this is somebody that I know sucks out on me.
And isn't that true poker justice? I mean, if someone's going to suck out on you, at least have it be a friend. Of course, they can get all the details they want at antiupmagazine.com/cruise. But if you haven't done that and you're a fan of our show already, you're never going to do it. So come on. Give Mary a call. Hey, let's move on to the Antiup News Desk.
Yeah, and we're going to switch this up a little bit. Yeah, I guess you're tired of hearing me monotone on these things, so we're going to alternate a little bit. We'll have a little fun with it.
I think we can this way.
I'll see whether you can mangle some words. And since I do the scripts here, I mean, maybe I'll throw in some Easter egg moments there.
Cool.
For you to trip over. All right, let's get started. Charges against five South Carolina men who were arrested for playing poker were dropped last week after a judge decided that poker is a game of skill. Attorney Jeff Phillips told WSPA-TV that while the decision was a circuit court one and has no binding on other state courts, it's nonetheless a victory for poker players in South Carolina.
Yes, a victory. A small victory, but a victory none the same. So
yes, we will take it.
I will take it. I am very happy. And a reminder of why we need legal regulated poker, 22 poker players were robbed of $12,000 at a private poker game in an Oklahoma strip mall suite. Oddly, the victims called police, even though it appears that their game was illegal. As of now, no charges are being filed against the victims, and the robbers are still at large.
All right, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? All right, now
call the cops.
I don't even know where to begin with this item. I mean, one, it's Oklahoma. All right, now, I meant to check out my Oklahoma geography before I got on here, but there are numerous poker rooms in Oklahoma. All right. Maybe there's none near Oklahoma City, and these guys just didn't want to drive to Tulsa or wherever they needed to go. But, you know, if poker's legal, why are you having a game with 22 people, $12,000 on the table, in a strip mall? You don't think word's going to get out?
I know.
And some guy's got to come guns blazing and this is going to happen?
It's Oklahoma. Like, the state creed, though, is like, you know, you have to have a shotgun in your bedroom.
Oh, man. Just go to the poker room and play.
I know. You know. Oh, man, that's insane.
At least if guns come blazing there, they got security guards with little tiny guns that might be able to stop them. Oh, and then, you know, hey, hi, 911. Yeah, I was breaking the law, but somebody broke the law bigger. Can you come arrest them, please? Thank you. I mean, they're lucky that the police just seem to think that, you know, they'd rather nab these big bad robbers than throw the book at these idiots playing poker. But, my God.
These are the same guys who are driving on the highway doing 95 behind a cop. And the cop is doing 95. The cop moves over. He passes him. The cop pulls him over. And he says, but you were doing 95, too. Duh. You were still breaking the law.
Oh, man. Crazy. All right. Well, And finally, Reuters reports that Hungarians have caught the poker bug, Chris. Wow. Likely fueled by the country's dire economic situation. The average monthly income in Hungary is $640, but some poker players are reporting incomes as much as $10,000 a month playing the Great American Game. The Poker Association of Hungary estimates that 500,000 citizens play poker live and 200,000 more play online.
Wait a minute. Now, how could they be making 10 grand a month if most people only make 640 a month in their jobs? I mean, you got to get a lot of people committing their entire bankrolls to make 10 grand a month.
I think a lot of that money's coming from online. So, you know, not just from their fellow Hungarians.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, and of course, the 10,000 is that, you know, like the Jillian Barbary weight loss picture before and after on the on the TV. You know, results are not typical. You know, the little asterisk thing.
See, now this is why we mixed up the NEF news desk, because you're funny as hell.
I mean, come on. I mean, Jillian Barbary, she weighs, what, 97 pounds with, like, 96-pound weight on her back?
I know.
And they put that big snuggy baggie over her for the before shot and make it look like she just, you know, oh, my God.
Snuggy baggie.
Drives me freaking insane every time I see that. But I don't mind because, you know, she's easy on the eyes, even snuggy back.
Well, I know it's hard to hear over all my laughter, but the hotline is ringing. So before we answer it, it's 813-448-1120. You call that number, you leave a message, we use it, and we'll send you something cool. So this comes from Jeff in Nashville.
Hey, guys. This is Jeffrey Neutron here in Nashville. I was just calling. I was listening to your show, and you had mentioned, Scott, about the 500-chip Super Turbo tournament that you played. It reminded me a couple months ago I made my first big score, but I think I was down to my last $50 in my account, and just thought I wanted to play the nightly 100 grand, so I bought into one of those super satellites that they do, you know, like I think it was like 200 chips or 250 chips. Got lucky, got into the tournament, and ended up going out in fourth place for a $7,700 score. It's definitely my biggest. And, yeah, well, I've kind of forgotten that, but it all started with the short stack. So don't write off completely, but I definitely got lucky. All right, guys, thanks a lot.
Short stack to victory, baby.
That sounds like you.
Yeah.
Well, not last night, but it sounds like you normally.
What I'm going to do is I'm probably going to start a new line of Cafe Press shirts called Short Stack Squigglies.
Short Stack Squigglies to victory.
That's going
to
be our new fan club.
Oh, man.
But, Jeff, we appreciate the call. Congratulations on your skill there. And we will be happy to send to Nashville once you send us the exact place in Nashville to send it to a beautiful set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from our great friend at Great Poker Hands. .com.
So the mailbag this week, I want you to read it, because we did some investigating. Usually we just try to answer these on the top of our heads, and generally we're correct, but we wanted to make sure.
Generally. We shoot for 75% accuracy on this show.
Hey, we never give a product money-back guarantee. You want your money back, you don't pay anything for the damn show. We do our best, damn it. But we actually did some investigating, talked to some people about it, just to make sure that we knew what was going on. We got some other things to talk about, too, but why don't you read the letter, and then we'll, well, it's not really a long letter, but why don't you get us started.
All right, this comes from Richard Santa Claus all the way up in North Carolina, and he wants to know, when seating alternate players at a table after the tournament has been running two levels, does the chip stack stay at the beginning of the mount, or is it reduced to accommodate the blinds that may have passed?
So now, when this letter came in, I immediately fired off one, saying, no, they get the full stack, because... Right. They're alternates. There's no reason why they should be punished. They're alternates. So, I mean, I figured, boom, that's the right answer, and I let it go. And then, well, we asked our friend Sam Minatello, who knows pretty much everything about poker, and he said they start with the full stack. So I said, yeah, because, you know, there's no way to tell, you know, how many times the blinds would have hit him at his particular table or whatever. And then that's when he came up with, well, no, actually, there is a formula. So I guess you could go either way, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, and I before we accosted Sam for this answer, I went to you and I'm like, you know, hey, Chris, not disagreeing with you, buddy.
Which you never do.
But when I'm sitting at the table and they have dead stacks there, they are taking the blinds out of it.
Right.
To which you bombasted back at me. Oh, those are paid stacks, Scott. They're different. And, of course, you were correct. But I think that's probably the misconception that's going on. If you're sitting next to a dead stack, then boom.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you're seeing. But if you're an alternate, they usually just give you a whole stack and sit you down.
But it's a good question because a lot of people, you know, want to make sure that when they sit down, they're not getting screwed out of chips or they're not being screwed when someone sits down. So it's good to know. But, yeah, I mean, I was an alternate once or twice before, I think at Derby Lane or it might have been somewhere else, but I was an alternate. When they sat me down, I had a full stack, and it was a good 25 minutes in, so I didn't lose any of my blinds.
Well, great. Well, Richard, send us your address. I'm assuming it might be the North Pole, but if it's not, maybe you want to send it to your summer home in North Carolina. Send it to us, and we will send you a beautiful hat from twiff.com.
Oh, man. All right, well, last week on the Ride Along with Columbo, we had two parts because episode 12 kind of really didn't need to be an episode, so we moved on to episode 13. And after doubling up with our all-in on Ace King on that episode 12, the blinds were 400 and 800 with a $100 ante. And I say $100 because that's the term everyone says, even though we mean units. And we had a stack of 9,600. Under the Gun plus one has 18,000 in chips and raises to 2,400. And we have Ace of Clubs, Jack of Spades. What do we want to do?
All right, first of all, I'm calling shenanigans because I'm looking at her notes and it says, Chris says, colon, nothing. So you're going to have some kind of wise, burning bush kind of answer to this because you've already soaked it in for a week and listened to a bunch of experts. So I'm calling shenanigans on whatever you say, unless, of course, it's wrong.
Yeah, actually, I just forgot. So I'm going to react to what you say.
Sure. I forgot.
I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. But here's the thing. This is one of my leaks in my game that has been in my game is that, you know, I get those Ace and Broadway cards, and I think it's a pretty big hand, and I'll either call or raise after a raise from a person in an easy early position. Uh-huh. And almost always I'm finding that those folks, if they have an ace, obviously they have a bigger ace than me. And chances are they do have an ace, and I'm in a huge, huge hole. So I really have been just folding these things here and getting out of the way and waiting for a better spot. Now, of course, had I be the first to act, I would be fine shoving here, but I'm not here. I got to call this raise or re-raise, I'm just not doing it.
You're saying that if you were the under the gun plus one and you were first into the pot with ace jack, you would shove 9,600 with the blinds at 4 and 8?
No, I would not actually.
Oh, okay. I thought that you were saying I'm with you. I'm laying this down. I'm looking for a better spot. Unless I really have something on this guy when I know I'm in position and I know that I can't play him or that I know that he does this with, you know, any two cards, I might call or re-raise. But I'm with you. I'm folding here.
All right. The forum, however, was split evenly between shoving and folding, Chris.
Huh.
Folks who said they want to shove said they were too short stacked, or M is too low to wait here, or we gotta go now. It's go time. And those who said fold said, as I said, we're likely a dog here against most players' ranges, and there's no chance to put a tournament on a line playing catch-up.
I guess I agree, too, that it's one or the other. I was thinking maybe I would call, but that's too much of my stack, so... Yeah, I think if I'm sitting there counting down my chips, I would probably either shove or fold. I don't think I would call. I mean, unless I absolutely knew everybody would fold behind me and I could outplay the guy. But even then, it's really iffy.
I mean, I wouldn't mind calling here with a pair, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
Something where I felt a little confident on the flop that I could push. But, I mean, I don't know what I'm hoping for on the flop here if I just call.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping for a jack, you know.
And even then, you know, are you good? You know, you could have queens, kings, or aces. You don't know, so.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's see what happens.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and welcome to episode 14 of Ride Along with Columbo. Ace-Jack? Fold. Fast. We started the hand with an M of 10, I know, but it can rarely be a poor decision to fold Ace-Jack from under the gun plus 2. I'll find better steel spots later. All players fold in under the gun plus 1 takes the blinds. I give up another couple of blinds and I'm again the short stack at the table. Under the gun, min raises, and under the gun, plus one folds. And with queen here, I'm going to do nothing but shove. I am in middle position and have 7,500 in chips left. There are just too many marginal hands that will call me here because of my stack size. It folds around to the original under-the-gun min-raiser who calls and tables ace-jack. Irony has its place in time, and we double up again. I now have 17K in chips, and we are in the money. But I am now moved to a table with pros Katrina Jett, Mike McDonald, and semi-pro blogger and excellent player Two Black Aces. Crap. It's still early on in my tenure at this table, and I get dealt 6-6 from early position. I can limp here and hope not to get re-raised, but this table is too strong not to punish me for that. Instead, I raise it to 1900 with a pocket pair. I get a call from a mid-position player with 35K in his stack, and the small blind calls. Three-handed, we see a flop of 8 of clubs, 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs. The small blind, after a brief delay, checks. And yes, I have the 6 of clubs. It's not just a matter of are you going to c-bet, but it's also a matter of what line you're going to take on the rest of this hand. So what do you want to do?
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Dr. Frank Toscano, our poker-playing resident board-certified doctor, is always well-received when he's on Annie Up. And today, Chris, we continue Annie Up's commitment to help our listeners improve their game away from the table by welcoming Dr. Stephen Bloomfield. Dr. Steve is a licensed psychologist with decades of experience getting into people's heads. And just like Dr. Frank, he's an avid poker player and columnist for Ante Up magazine. Dr. Steve, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Great. Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
We'll drill down into some specifics later, but start us off here with just kind of an overview on how poker and psychology interact together.
Sure. You know, everybody's talking about the psychology of poker and how important it is, and how some people are writing and talking about that it's even more important than knowing the cards and knowing the odds and knowing the probabilities. For me, there are really 3 ways that psychology and poker interact with each other. First, there's the whole issue of you, the player, and that has to do with a lot of the content of the columns I've been writing lately about peak performance and how you apply sports psychology issues to the game of poker, whether it's a sport or not. Maybe someday we'll be in the Olympics. but anyway, that's the person, the player. The second big issue is, and the second way psychology is important, is your opponent. Can you read your opponent? How is your opponent interacting? Can you pick up any tells or patterns? And the third way, which is really advanced and really the thing that more advanced poker players want to do, is how do I manage the table using psychology? You know, part of poker is the art of deception, and part of psychology is understanding the art of deception. So it's those 3 things, you the player, how you take care of yourself, how you prepare yourself, how you perform at the peak, your opponents, the other folks at the table, and then the whole meta thing of the table itself and how you manage what's going on from a psychological perspective.
Man, that was a lot to take in.
Yeah, I know. But really, it's just you, them, and the game.
Now, I played with you up in Jacksonville, yes. Doctor, and when you go to the poker room, what kind of exercises do you run through to put yourself in the right frame of mind?
The 3 big things to do, and I really do this myself and really counsel and advise people to do this because it's really simple, is the first thing is that there's a transition from wherever you were to wherever you're going. And so when you get to the poker room, as you're getting there, you need to start thinking about poker. You need to start thinking about what you're going to play. One of the articles I wrote, I talked about taking a lap around the room. So when I get to the room right before I sign up for a table, I walk around the room and, start listening to the riffle of chips and realize that I'm in the poker room And even if I play online, my biggest failing is the online issue, because I'll do it sometimes when I have like 20 minutes and I really don't get into the right headset. But on the way to the poker room, I try and think of success-oriented positive thoughts. And then when I get there, I do what every peak performer, athlete does. I try to attune myself to where I am, get a feel. You know, it's a lot like pro football players. Before they play at a stadium, a new stadium or stadium they're going to, even while they're practicing at their field, they listen to the crowd noise. So I'm up here in Jacksonville, we've got the Jaguars. Jaguars are going to Seattle next week. This week they'll be playing crowd noise from the Seahawks stadium, and when they get there, they'll do a walkthrough in that stadium to try and attune themselves. My suggestion is as you're driving or walking, however you get to the poker room, is put yourself in the right headset, get your head in the game, think positive thoughts about what's going to happen. How you know, if you start thinking negative, there's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then when you get there, attune yourself to the environment, really get into the feel of what's going on.
Well, you know, poker players are always looking for weaknesses in their opponents to attack. What are some of the signs that our opponents aren't really in the right frame of mind to play optimally at the table?
Look, the things that I notice most are women and men who are watching the clock, that they're there, but they're on a short time. They have to get home. They have to catch the spouse. They have to do some shopping. They have to pick up the kid. So you see somebody like that, and you know that their whole focus isn't on the table. And you can use that to your advantage. That's like that level three that I was talking about, how to manage the game. You see somebody who's antsy and, you know, jittery and maybe shaking their legs and watching their clock and doing that. In the poker rooms I play most locally are dog track poker rooms, Orange Park and St. John's. So I like to watch guys who are betting the dogs. If their concentration is on the dogs, then I know that full concentration isn't at the table. The other three or four things that I notice that I take count on are people taking lots of sell calls, you know, business people who are getting called by their office and they have to stand up from the table, you know, and saying things like, I'm in the hand or in a blind, let me call you back, and so they're losing their focus. People who are drinking a lot. you know, I don't want to advocate or say that you want to see somebody drinking too much, but they start playing much looser and, again, lose focus. People who are angry, maybe if you notice someone's a little gloomy or depressed, anything out of the ordinary. And, of course, the big poker issue is tilt.
Yeah.
Anytime you see someone going on tilt, you got to figure out is that bet being made because of tilt? Are they playing looser? Are they just playing? Are they tossing in that last short stack just to, you know, like a roulette bet? watching the clock, taking calls, drinking, anger, tilt, those kinds of things are what I look at.
Okay.
Wow, sounds like Chris, minus drinking.
Sounds like a ball.
all right, Doctor, if you hang around to poker players long enough, and I know you do and Chris and I do, you'll hear things like, you know, I just know a flush is coming, so I'm going to fold, or I always lose pocket eights, so I'm going to fold. Now, we all know that cards don't have memory, but what can we do to convince our brains of that? Because we seem to forget it at times, I think.
Well, again, it's, this is called magical thinking. I got a hand, and I know the next card's going to be, I know it's going to be a diamond. Well, you know, I forgot to count that. I already saw six diamonds out, and I got four, and that's ten, and there are only three left. And, my odds are not that, you know, my outs aren't nine, but my outs are three, and I know that consciously, but I just know it's coming. I think it's a matter of just conditioning yourself and preparing yourself. You know that that's going to happen. Some people have called this the gambler's dilemma. They, you know, we know that it's random. We know that it's variance. People bet, you know, like there's this whole issue of runs. Mm-hmm. Runs are true, but they're not true because they're magical. They're true because when you're winning, you start playing differently. You start playing more confidently. Other people think that if you can get other people to think that I'm on a streak or I'm on a run, even though they don't, statistically they don't exist, perceptually they do exist. And so we have to rid ourselves of this gambler's dilemma, magical thinking, and we have to hope that we can instill in our opponents the same thing we want to get rid of in ourselves.
What is it about the brain that makes us do things that we clearly know we shouldn't be doing, such as, I don't know, calling an $11 bet in a 25-cent, 50-cent, no-limit home game when you only have a gut shot and you had a few beers in you?
Well, you know, we think that there's going to be that we sometimes overestimate our own skill. We sometimes forget that this is a game of variance and that the cards, that there's probabilities, and we get to a place where we just know that we're going to hit it. I mean, how many times have you seen someone stay in a hand and get run a run or something? And there's a concept in psychology called intermittent reinforcement. It's why slot machines work and attract people. If something hits predictably, it doesn't get reinforced as strongly as if something hits kind of randomly, but hits enough to reinforce that it's going to happen. And so that's what the brain remembers. It remembers that. Well, you know, I was playing this hand and I got run of diamonds and I got run of straight, or I had two pair and there was clearly a nut flush on the turn, but I still stayed in, even though if people forget about calculating the odds, looking at their opponent, playing against it. You know, I know the guy's a tight player, but this time I think he's bluffing. We trick ourselves all the time. And the only way to avoid that is to really study the game, have a study group, and work on your own self about how you approach these situations so you can do some thought blockage.
You hear that, Scott?
Now, I'll tell you, if I followed all of these rules all of the time, I would be a much better poker player.
Absolutely.
All right, now I ran track and cross country in high school, and I think my coach gave me one of these I like to call them deep thoughts, like deep cassette thought, tapes, yeah, that I put in when I went to sleep at night and kind of soothed me to sleep with positive thoughts about running my best the next day. I'm not sure it really did anything out there to annoy my family who had to listen to it, because I was back before Al Gore invented earbuds. But are there tools like that that exist today that poker players might look into, or that you would recommend, or not?
Well, as soon as I finish developing it, I'm going to recommend mine. But I did in the 80s. I put together not for poker, but for what I called recreational athletes, weekend warriors, a thing called Head Games. And it's funny, I got the name. All the pro teams, pro and elite athletes, use these visualizations and these kind of what you call deep thought things. I got the name Head Games from an odd place. I was watching a show on TV, and the quarterback at West Point, you would figure would be the most rigid, conservative place, and he was saying, "Nah, the best part of my training is head games." And the guy said, "What do you mean head games?" He said, "Those tapes that they make me listen to, you know." and I actually put together a series for recreational athletes, and I am working on one that you guys will be the first to know when it's together, about doing this for poker. Poker's a little more difficult because of the variance issue.
Yeah.
I mean, weightlifting, running, golf, you can really improve to your peak because it's you, and you don't have to worry about that other guy who's going to call me with, I got aces and he's got a 6-9 offsuit, and I go all in, and he calls me and he gets runner-runner straight, and I don't improve because I can't control him through any of these, but I can control me. So it's definitely been proven in the athletic world. Started way back in the 60s with the East Germans, and we adopted it. The United States adopted it as soon as we found out about it. But seriously, I am trying to develop one for poker. It's a little hard because of the variance and the opponent issue. But you guys will get the first preview of it, I'm sure.
Awesome.
Excellent.
One of our other columnists named Lee Childs, he has a slogan that he goes by because he coaches as well, and it's called Decide to Win. And it basically reminds us that, you know, we need to play with confidence. You know, and confidence comes with success, of course, but are we able to psych up our brain even before we taste success?
Absolutely, absolutely. Decide to win is a great phrase. There's a whole thing in psychology called self-fulfilling prophecies. You know, I once did some, I'm going to revert to another form of gaming. I once interviewed about 100 people about slot machines. It was a bus from New York City to Atlantic City. I was doing some consulting to a casino, and they wanted the ultimate end of the consulting was what, you know, how they should place things and what the players think. And I interviewed two busloads of people who were coming down, and I had this elaborate interview. Two of us were doing it, and then we narrowed it down to two questions: what are you playing? And universally, the people on the bus were going to play the slots. And then the second question was, when do you leave the slot machine? And universally, the answer was, when I lose all my money. And I said, wow. And I, you know, and so their self-fulfilling prophecy didn't matter. They were going to, you know, they decided to lose. And so absolutely, you know, I would suggest Lee's slogan of decide to win, or any other slogan that works for you, is to literally write it down, paste it on your mirror. I knew a guy who decided that what he wanted was a Bentley, a car, beautiful car. And it took him 10 years to get it, but he had a picture of that car on his mirror, looked at it every day when he brushed his teeth and shaved. It's how you instill unconsciously in your head how you get there. And so I think that's decide to win is a fantastic coaching phrase. And it really does. It not only, when you're feeling good and you're feeling in the zone and you're feeling confident, you know, the cards don't necessarily run better, but what you do with them runs better. And so you see so many guys who come in and say, and it's okay for them. They're parts of their record that's coming for the entertainment. You know, I'm okay if I lose a couple $100 tonight. Well, if that's okay for you, then that's okay. But if it's not okay and you really want to advance at the game and play at your peak, you can't go with that attitude. You can't go with the attitude that, you know, it's okay to lose a couple $100 tonight. You have to go with the attitude that I'm going to win tonight or I'm going to learn something tonight.
Plus, when you're emulating confidence at the table, whether you're successful or not, your opponents will feel that automatically, feel that confidence coming from you and be either intimidated or think twice about playing a hand with you.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah, it's amazing. If you can instill, even if you're losing, if people start getting the idea that you're a player and you understand how to play and, you know, and you instill that kind of, I'm in charge of this, I know what's going on, I play well, I play all the time, and I'm confident in my game. Even if they see you losing hands, they know it's the cards, not you, and it does intimidate, and it does make for a much better way to play, both for yourself and the image that you project to people.
Right.
I mean, just look at the intimidation of any, you know, serious pro when he sits down at a table with people. People, you know, you see at the World Series, people at the same table as one of the pros are asking the guy for his autograph. I mean, just imagine, I'm playing with you, but I really want your autograph more than
that. All right, let's chat a little bit about some of the topics you've raised in your Head Games column in Annie Up. In one, you said, quote, "The only real control poker players have in a poker game is control of themselves." And I know you mentioned that a little bit, but right, go into a little bit more detail about what you meant by that.
Well, you can, you know, it's magical to think that you're going to control the cards. I mean, you just can't. No matter what you're going to do, the cards have no memory, especially in this game. There are a lot of people who come to the game, and somebody said, well, what about card counting? I said, I think you're playing the wrong game. I said, that you know, there's no card counting here. And so the first thing is, so you have to control yourself about playing at your peak, and that requires some work, and I've touched on that in some articles about relaxed activation and tilt and comfort zones, and how to deal with all of that. And so you really, and how to psych yourself up and some of the stuff we've actually talked about today, and how you, you know, later on, how you visualize, how you attune yourself to the room. And that's the real control you have. You hope that you can start understanding the other players, read their tells, read their patterns, read their disposition and mood at the time, but you can't control that. You can't control them. You can control how you react to those patterns. So when you see someone having a tell, you want to be able to say, how am I going to react to this tell? It always has to come back to you. It's not a self-centered you, because it's taken in all of this information. And so at all aspects, the thing to work on is yourself. And as if you can work on yourself, the other things will start coming much more readily and become more natural to you at the game. Even the couple of things we talked about today, like the decide to win and the confidence and the morale boosting and the deep thought stuff, are all stuff designed so that the player plays at their peak.
All right, so one of the things that we always mention, and you even brought it up yourself, just the going on tilt and how we know it could be just so terrible at the table. And I've, you know, of course we've read your columns and you've advocated that players should learn how to keep themselves relaxed to avoid this problem.
Right.
How can they do that?
Well, they first have to identify what's happening. You know, usually there's a lot of mini tilts that go into a full blown thing. And what I suggested in one of the columns was, the simplest thing is to practice deep breathing relaxation techniques. And it's not a touchy feely thing. It's a very simple thing. It's learning how to training your mind and your body to relax on cue. Well, so how do you do that? You learn how to relax using techniques of breathing. I think it was in the first or second column, breathing in through your nose and holding it and breathing out through your mouth. And then when you're feeling yourself stressing or tensing up or getting anxious or going on tilt, well, either do it at the table, because it's very natural. You don't have to do it for the whole 5 or 10 minutes when you practice. You only have to do it once or twice. And if it gets worse, then you walk away from the table. I was working with a guy up here, and he told me, he said, tell people go into the men's room, go into a stall, sit down, and do their breathing exercises. They're only going to miss a round, and then they'll come back, and they'll be more focused, more centered, more grounded, and be able to do it. Even in my other professional life, where I do forensic psychology, I testify a lot, and if I have a particularly tense, stressful case, I'm testifying, I've come to the point where two quick, deep breaths kind of gets me right into a relaxed state. And once I'm relaxed, I can, and now relaxed doesn't mean, you know, spaced out in front of the TV and half-dozing. it means an activated relaxation where you're really ready to take on the game and keeping your head in the game. And I like to talk about that more than anything else. Is the goal of psychology and poker is learning how to keep your head in the game all the time.
All right, so your column for our November issue, which comes out next week, you write about the contradictory advice that players get on whether they should or shouldn't be playing in their comfort zone. You know, some people say, you know, don't go out of your comfort zone because then you're going to have some problems. But others say, if you don't ever go out of your comfort zone, how are you ever going to grow as a player? So
that's right.
What's your take on that and what players can do?
First of all, I think one of my takes is that people don't kind of understand comfort zones. You know, I was joking with a friend. I think I may have put it in a column. I said, I spent my whole life trying to get comfortable, and now people are telling me I have to, like, break out of it and be uncomfortable.
Right.
That's not what it means. It means embracing the next level, that you play at a game where you feel good, where the stakes are right for you, where they're not, you're not playing with, you know, what we used to call scared money, and where you're confident. Where you're a competent player. And so if you're just an occasional recreational player and that's where you want to play, stay there. It's great. If you're not and you want to increase and enhance and perform at your peak, then you move up a little and you try and embrace that next comfort zone. It's kind of not breaking out of it, but it's embracing the next comfort zone and creating a new comfort zone so that it's not too abrupt to your system. Now, that works for most people. Probably doesn't work for a lot of 21-year-olds who are used to a lot of a quick action behavior, and they may move up much more quickly. So you have to for me, it really depends on your temperament, your own personality. Do you like risk? How do you handle risk? I knew a guy once who said, who was in real estate development, and I said, isn't this a pretty risky thing? He said, risky is jumping out of a plane with a parachute that might not open. He said, my business is like being on a roller coaster. He said, it's scary, and you get exhilaration, but you really know that most of the time the roller coaster is on the tracks. And he said, so once you accept that, you embrace the exhilaration, you embrace the variance. As long as you're staying on something that's on the tracks and not just free falling when you don't know how to do it, then you're in it. So I think what people have to decide is what kind of player they're going to be, what they want out of the game. Are they just really, really comfortable where they are, and that's what they like, that's where they want to be, or they want to enhance their game, go to their peak performance, and play at a high level, and then they have to kind of embrace the next comfort zone, and then keep moving and moving and moving.
Every month, you and I kind of chat back and forth through email. You know, getting your column. I always look forward to the next column that's coming out, and then you're always telling me what your upcoming, you know, columns might be. And you mentioned that you might be doing one on setting goals. Can you give us a little preview of what you're going to do there?
Absolutely. It pretty well acknowledged that everybody who's effective sets goals. We're going to talk about goal setting and there's a little tricky business in goals, and that is people usually set goals like, I'm going to go to poker room today, and I'm going to try and win $200, or I'm going to try and win $1,000, or whatever. Goals really have to be set long-term backwards. So you have to decide where you want to be in a year or 2 years, and then set a goal that makes sense, that's measurable and realistic. I have a little acronym that I'm going to use in a column that I won't put out now because I want people to read the column. but you have to set goals that are measurable, attainable, realistic, difficult but not impossible. And you set a 1 year or 2 year goal, and then you kind of work back. You set a 6 month goal, and you have to know how that 6 month goal fits into the 1 year goal. So you have a 1 year goal, and then you have like 3 6-month goals and like 6 3-month goals and maybe 10 2-week goals that'll do it. And the goals, the 2-week goals, have to all fit in to the next level. It's kind of like walking up a ladder till you get to the peak. You know, you start off with baby steps and then you move forward. But that we know that effectiveness and people who are successful have these goals set. And that gets us back to the thing you asked earlier, is you can't set goals up for other people. They have to be your goals. And that's why I say you can only control you, because you can't set a goal that's dependent on I can't say I'm going to play heads up with Chris and he's going to lose. I have to say I'm going to play heads up with Chris and I'm always going to get my money in at the right time. I may lose the hand because I don't have total control over that, but what I do have control over is getting my money in right and making sure that that can happen. So the article, the column's going to kind of work into that and teach people how to do the beginnings of this stuff.
Well, Doctor, we appreciate your time. We'll let you get back to helping folks here. But one last question here. We know you offer one-on-one and group workshops for players of all levels. What can a player expect in an individual session and a group session?
An individual session, what people can expect is to start off with discussion of where they want to be in this game. You know, where they see themselves, what they want to work on. And then we'd go through some simple stuff. We'd start off with the concepts of the tuning and getting yourself used to the room, relaxation, and that can go as deep as and as far as guided imagery and visualization and things like that. What happens different in the group sessions, you do similar things, but in a group, you get some feedback from other people, you know, who say, well, for example, do a goal-setting exercise in a group, and this has happened often, and somebody will say, "You can't do that." and I'll say, "Why? It sounds like a good goal to me because it meets all the criteria." He says, one time a guy said, "You're too stuck on the criteria. It's an impossible goal. He can't predict that." And he was right. And the goal had to be that you really have to be careful how you phrase it, because you get back to the self-fulfilling prophecy. You can never, you can't say that I'm going to, you know, a dream goal is I'm going to make the final table of the World Series. That the real goals, the hard work goals, are how do you get there? And as long as you meet all of those other goals. So what also happens in a group setting is you get feedback from other poker players and other people who are facing the same stuff. One of the problems, like everything, is a lot of people like individual consultation because they don't want to be in a group of people they might be playing against. Somebody asked me why attorneys don't go to group trainings, and I said, because they have to go to court against each other. They don't want anybody to know their secrets.
All right, well, thanks again, Dr. Steve. We appreciate you being on the show. We appreciate you writing the column. And, folks, you can go to AntiUpMagazine.com and read those great columns every month. And Doctor, you've also said if listeners email us some questions, you'd be happy to answer them, right?
Absolutely. Email the questions. You can give them the space to AntiUpMagazine, and I'll answer them personally. But if you give me permission, the person who asks the questions will include them in a future article.
Excellent. I think that goes for all of our columnists too. So email those to podcast@antiupmagazine.com and get some help. And again, Doctor, have a great time. We'll see you next time we're up in Jacksonville.
All right, great. Keep your heads in the game.
Hi, this is Shannon Elizabeth, and you are listening to the Anti-Up PokerCast.
Okay, Chris, hand of the week, we've got a... Oh, hell to the no.
Hell to the no.
Raz, seriously? Long-time listener Justin J. Herkey, he sends us in a Raz hand this week. After that, you know, the terrible, terrible, disgusting go shower afterwards suck out that you put on me. And now we've got to, like, I've got to get back into the Raz frame of mind.
I don't really think he's looking for your advice, Scott.
All right, you know, hey, I'm going to look around for another hand of the week here. Well, dagnabbit.
Dagnabbit.
All right, we're going to have to go with this hand because we have, Chris, zero hands of the week stored up right now.
Wow, really?
We're forced to use... a hand from the worst game ever invented, Raz, this week. So, you know, hey, folks, send us some hands of the week, podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Maybe we get some good ones. We can finally get Lee Childs out of temporary hibernation here and get him back on. But send us some hands. I'm not going to be analyzing Raz hands for the rest of my life. I am not.
And please, oh, please, don't make us revert back to analyzing World Poker Tour hands. I mean, we really need the Antiup Nation to step up here and send us some stuff. I mean, if I'm taking hands off of TV again, that's it, man. The show's over. I quit.
All right. Well, I'm going to hold my nose and get through this hand. And actually, no, it's actually a pretty good Raz hand. So,
okay.
This is actually, and I'm not going to say it came from Apes, but it looks like it might have came from Apes. I recognize a lot of these names. We will protect the names to, you know, shield the guilty. But this is from level 3, 75-150 level. Chip stacks, I think, are largely irrelevant at this point. But the lowest chip stack at the table has 1,500, and the biggest has 3,500, and that happens just to be the jerk-slash-villain in this hand. Jay okay. Hurtie's words, not mine.
Okay. Yeah, make sure we're clear on that.
All right, our hero is dealt the ace of spades, three of clubs underneath, five of spades up top.
Wow.
Now, I would say this is a pretty good hand, but this mirrors the hand that I went out with last week, so what the heck did I know? Still got to put two more cards to this thing.
It is pretty sweet, though.
Yeah, and you might have dungle boosters like Chris that are going to repop you with six Ace 3.
All right, I'm gonna call you out here. What the hell's a dungle boost?
I don't know. I'm just working on my T-shirt line, man. All right, as he looks around the table, there is a Jack. We won't even.
Let's make Faso happy and not mention the suits.
There is a Jack. There's an Ace. There's a Six. There's another Six. There's another Ace. There's a King, and there is a Deuce. Obviously, the King brings in. The deuce gets out of the way, and we are next with our five showing, Chris. Now, remember, we have an ace, two aces and two sixes. They act behind us.
Right.
What are you doing here with this terrible, terrible three-wheel hand?
I am folding. No, I'm completing. I'm completing, and if I could bet more, I would, but all I could do is complete, so that's what I'm doing.
All right. You know, I there's no mystery right now so far.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
All right, so he completes. The Jack gets out of the way. The first Ace gets out of the way. That's good news for us.
Uh-huh.
The first Six, however, raises.
Hmm.
And Jay Herkey says, interesting. My partner goes, hmm. And the rest of the Andab Nation probably has a similar reaction. Maybe. All right, the other Six gets out of the way. Now, the remaining Ace raises yet again.
Huh.
All right, now Jay Herkey goes, seriously? All right. Inflection at me. What the hell is this for? Was this a good move on his part?
Oh, man.
All inflection courtesy of Scott Long. Thank you very much. Thank you.
His acting lessons are really paying off.
They're not bad.
You're doing pretty well.
All right, so, I got to say, Chris, I don't know necessarily why the rage here. I mean, the guy's got an ace up. We don't know he's got underneath.
Right.
He very well could have a couple wheel cards, and let's just assume for a minute that he's got two wheel cards underneath. You would be three betting here, wouldn't you?
Well, I think I might. Let's say I don't know what he has, but let's say he has a six underneath, you know, and even maybe a six deuce. Can you imagine if he had six deuce underneath and saw that board? I mean,
exactly.
I would make it three bets to go. And if I did have two wheels underneath, I would probably not believe that you had three wheels. The odds of three wheels are astronomical. So I like that my aces are out. I like that if I have a six, my sixes are out. And if I have a deuce, any one of those cards, a ton of my cards are out. So I don't have to worry about pairing up, and it's more likely I'm going to make a better hand. So I don't have a problem with this guy three betting. And I think, did he start with a decent stack, this guy, whoever it is?
He had 2,000 chips.
All right, well, he's middle of the road. But I don't mind at this point when you're not even at Fitz Street yet. I don't mind making that three bets there, really. But I probably would be a wuss and call, but I don't mind the three bet there.
Well, here's the thing is I like raising here, too, to kind of dry people out.
Yeah.
You know, Jay Herkey in the email said, you know, hey, this is a drawing game, you know, should we really be going crazy before we get anywhere, and I think that's exactly why you do raise, because the more people you drive out, the fewer people you're drawing against. So
yeah,
and I would think of having an ace showing, I've obviously got the best hand showing now because the other ace got out of the way.
Yeah,
and I've got a raise and a re-raise from a five and a six. I want to kind of show them, hey, I've got the ace and I've got the good, so be careful. I mean, nothing else is pot control for later on.
Yeah, I agree. It depends on what my hand is, but I like knocking somebody else out. You know, what if you were just representing something and now you see that two guys are willing to put in two and three bets, maybe you get out now because you really have like 8-5 ace or whatever. So I don't fault that raise there, that three bet.
All right, cool. The bring-in, of course, gets out of the way of this nonsense. Our hero calls, and he wonders, Chris, whether he should capped it here.
You know, I can go either way on this. Honest, I don't mind capping it, but since, you know, you could, and what happened to me a ton was bricking on 4th Street, and three of your good cards are out. And since these guys are raising and re-raising, the likelihood of them having some more cards you need in the hole are probably out too. So I don't dislike the call, to be honest. I know that we should probably, you know, go crazy and cap it because we got three wheels, but I don't dislike it since we don't have a really big stack here either. Pot control, like you were saying. I don't dislike the call.
Yeah, I don't mind the call here either because, as you said, you know, we've got three of our outs are out, including one really good out. Actually, three cards that are out are really good cards for us.
Right.
And, you know, this guy is obviously showing – I mean, we already got raised and re-raised, so, you know, let's let this other guy take the lead here, and maybe we can punish him later on if we hit well on the next couple cards. So
yeah, because you're not going to get the other guy to fold at this point.
No.
It's too much money out there for him to call for two more bets, and so really all you're doing is just building a pot, and you're not really getting anything out of the raise except more money in the pot. So at this point, I don't think there's a real reason to. I mean, you know, Mitchell Koger could probably come on the show and tell us we're foolish, but
yeah.
To me, I'm just calling too probably.
Okay. So we call, and the initial racer calls as well, too. Three of us going to 4th Street. We are dealt a queen, which goes with our 5. The 6 is dealt an 8, and the ace is dealt a jack.
Sounds like it's my hand.
I really do. This is one of the hardest things in Rats, I think. You start with 3 beautiful cards, ace, tray, 5, and then you get a pretty crappy brick.
Yeah.
And it's a tough thing to go now. Of course, as he said, the 3 better also brick too. Not as bad as us, of course, but then the guy in the middle, he got a low card. So
yeah.
And he's gonna start off, of course, he's gonna bet out and goes to the ace jack next, who raises Chris.
Uh-huh.
Which generates a WTF question mark from our hero Jay Herkey. Are you WTFing as well here to this move?
I'm not. I mean, I like this move. Here's the reason. You bricked. So he's thinking, if I make it 2 bets to you with a queen showing, you really better be absolutely perfect in the hole to call. And even then, you're going to realize that the other guy who bet out might now, because he knows he's ahead, might make it another bet. And then you're looking at calling 4 bets with a queen.
Right.
So, I love this move. This move is intended to get our friend Jay Herkey out, and I don't think it's a bad move. I think that he's willing to call one more bet after this guy, whoever it is, to get to Fifth Street as a favorite if he's got, like, deuce 6 on the hole. I think that he's probably a favorite if it gets to Fifth Street and the other person could brick. So I like this move, trying to knock our buddy out.
Yeah, anyway, he probably has a much better draw to the initial guy anyhow. So, I mean, it's not really bad money going in either.
Right.
Even if it's called. All right, so he raises, and it gets to us, of course, now. This is the classic, as you mentioned, the classic Raz squeeze play here. Are you going to be squeezed out here if you're our hero?
I think I am going to fold. Just because, again, I don't have that big of a stack here. And it's going to get expensive on the next street. I probably let him get away with it, and I'm not going to re-raise. So, and if I call, like I said, I'm looking at 4 bets, and I can't afford that right now with only 3 to a made hand, only 3 to come. So I'm probably getting out.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I initially think I told him that I would have called here, but I think the more I look at it and how we're talking, you're right. This is let's just cut bait here and come back again, because there obviously is going to be fireworks. I got to continue in this hand.
I love the phrases you use. Let's cut bait and go fishing again some other day. That's awesome, man. Awesome.
All right, so we just he just calls here. Now, of course, the original bettor has nothing to do with this. He's raising again, Chris.
Oh, of course. He's got, what, 6-8. So, I mean, he knows he's good at this point. That's why I don't like the call there. You know?
Getting that money, he's got to get that money in good.
Absolutely. I mean, he's probably a little, he probably knows that he's got a good chance to be sucked out on, so he wants to get as much money in there and make people pay, you know, but he knows he's got the best hand at this point, so why not make it another bet?
Yep. All right, so he does that. Now the ace-jack raises again to cap it, Chris.
Holy cow. He really wants you out, man. He does not want you in this hand. Oh, but this is the whole reason to fold, you know.
Stubborn now, comes to mind. Stubborn comes to mind.
It's exactly what we were thinking, is that we're going to end up calling a capped bet with a queen high. So this is why you probably should have gotten out, but now it's capped. So, geez, I'm still folding, I think. If I had gotten to this point the way he did, I think I still fold.
Yeah, because it's 2 more bets to us now. So if there's 1 more bet, I think I might just punish myself and take it and see whether I can yeah. get a low card and go broke some other way in the same hand.
Yeah.
But two bets called now. It's probably time to get out, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we should have done it the first time, but we didn't learn our lesson, so now the second time, let's just get out.
All right, but that would not be a good hand of the week, Chris. Jay Herkey is going to punish himself doubly here by calling the two bets. The other raiser calls the bet, and the three of us remain as we move on to Fifth Street.
Yeah, I don't like that overcall he made, but what are you going to do? So, all right, let's see what happens.
All right, we get a four to go with our five and queen.
Awesome.
Well, see, you know, the poker guys are catching up to us here.
Yep.
The 6-8 gets a nine.
Hmm.
Not a terrible card for him. And the ace-jack gets a 10. Kind of like that.
Yeah, that's good. That's
all right,
good.
So the 6-8-9, of course, is controlling the action, and of course he's going to bet out into this.
Massive
play. And now the ace-jack 10 waves the white flag just like Dido, Chris. He's out of this thing. After all that crazy raising and re-raising, he's got two bananas here. That's enough for him. He's going to wait.
Yeah, absolutely. Fifth Street, the bet doubles. You're only going to get yourself in trouble, and you'd have to catch unbelievably perfect to make a perfect hand. And this guy's already got a made nine, probably, so.
Yeah, more than likely he does. And, so obviously an easy fold there.
Right.
Now it gets back to our hero. Not such an easy fold now. Obviously we would have folded on Fourth Street, but now it's Fifth Street, and now we've got three to a wheel, Chris.
Four to a wheel.
Four to a wheel, yeah. Well,
so we called. We called, right?
Well, that's what I'm asking. What are we doing?
Well, at this point, you know, it's really interesting. Now, if I remember correctly, the hand is 9-8-6. This guy's got showing, right? And we have four to a wheel plus a queen. You know, if you think about the Super System chapter of Raz, this is where Doyle says any ace, deuce, 3-4, like king, is a favorite over a made 9-8. But I'm not sure if he meant if you were heads up right away with the guy or if there was another third party in the hand. Because, like, you know, you got to remember the third party's in this hand raising and re-raising, so he probably has a lot of your outs. So I'm not sure, but you're probably even money or maybe a favorite here, but a slight favorite. And the other thing, too, is that Super System also said 9-6, you're not a favorite. Don't bet because 9-6 is more of a favorite against you. So, Wayne, the other cards that are out, I don't think I raise. I think I just call.
No, you're just going to call.
Yeah, well, you know what Super System said there.
Interesting what you said. I mean, what you said was pretty interesting. I mean, if you look at the board that our villain has here, 9-8-6, even if he's perfect underneath, you know, any 9, any 8, any 7, any 6, any deuce, and we take the lead on the next hand.
Yeah.
Assuming that he doesn't, you know, get a better card, too.
Yeah.
So. You know what? I don't know. I mean, at this point, how much money? We've got a lot of money invested here. I might be taking this wall and maybe putting the pressure on him here. I don't think a raise is going to get him out, though. So if you're raising, it's just to build value for, you know, on the come that you're actually going to hit.
Yeah, and we got to be running out of money sooner or later, too, when you think about it. I mean, there's been a lot of raises and re-raises, and now if you raise it again, you're betting 300, and you only started with, like, what'd you say, 17 or so?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're getting pretty low on funds, so... I don't know. I think I might call, but if I'm going to go to the wall with this one, then, yeah, I'm going to raise, thinking that this is my last hand. Either I'm doubling up or going home. So
right.
I guess it's all depending on your mindset, but I'm just calling, I think, still.
Okay. All right, and that's what our hero does. He calls, so we're heads up to 6th Street, and we get a 6 to go with our 5, queen, 4.
Man.
We're just falling into this hand.
Wow. You got to like a 6-5.
Our hero, though... gets a 4 to go with the 6-8-9.
He's a villain.
He's a hero. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out in the end. Well, I tell you what, though. If you think back to what we talked about really early in the hand and with the 6s and deuces out, if this guy really did have 6 deuce, we're beat and we're essentially drawn dead. So I'm scared. I mean, I'm not going to not bet my 6-5, but wow, this is setting up to be like a 6-4 hand. Based on what you know, we were thinking earlier that's why he was raising and capping and everything because he might have a perfect hand too, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now get this: the villain checks.
Ooh, did it pair him, or did that? Is he tricking us? Is he pair him and he's dying for us to have a 6-5? Wow, that's tricky.
See, this is why I used to like Raz.
Yeah, why you used to like it.
Because this is it's an interesting dilemma here, because now we've got a pretty good hand. We probably got it's a third nuts now.
Yeah, or something.
And and this guy got a better card too. I mean, we could either be still battling here, or he paired that, and now we should be getting some bets in here to recoup our money, because we got lucky here. You know, we probably should have got out earlier, but now we've caught up, and this hand can't get much better for us.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to have to bet here and hope that he wasn't tricking us. I have to bet. I have a 6-5,
yeah.
You know, and he only has a 98 showing. I mean, he could have a 6-4 made, or no, I guess he can't have a 6-4 made, but he could have, you know, drawing to a better hand than us. But at this point, we're ahead, so I have to bet.
Yeah, I'm going to bet out because I want to find out whether he's going to raise me and whether he's playing possum here, just trying to suck me out. But, you know, I could make a case maybe, and maybe I'm kind of crazy here. I can make a case for maybe calling, or I mean just checking here behind and getting him to, you know, bet out. Because remember, he's going to act first on the next hand, on the next card.
Yeah.
And maybe try to raise him there if I think, or, you know, kind of make him think that I'm not as good as I am. Though I don't know whether he's really going to buy that, because the six, there's so many sixes out already that you can't imagine that paired us.
Yeah, I just don't think I could check a 6-5 when I know I'm ahead and anything can happen. You know, in my mind, I'm always envisioning the worst when I play poker. So, he could easily have ace-deuce in the hole and be drawn to a better hand than me, and I want him to pay for it. And I got a 6-5. I know I'm ahead here. I don't think I could check and hope that he bets or, you know, on the next street. Because on the next street, I think he bets first, so, and we can lose a bet here too. So,
yeah.
I'm going to bet.
All right, that's what our hero does, and he just gets called. And we go to the river, and we pick up a 7. Doesn't really do anything for us.
No.
But the villain checks again.
Wow. You can't check here. I guess you got to bet. I mean, some people might say I'm happy to win this pot, but very, very rarely do people check raise on the river, so I'm betting here.
Yeah, I think this is kind of the classic problem with limit games. I mean, we've always talked about how limit games is about saving bets and gaining bets. So on the river here, I mean, obviously we've got a strong hand, and I think we got to bet it out. But if we get raised, it's going to be by a better hand probably.
Yeah.
And now we're going to put 2 bets in that we didn't need to put in if we lose. But if we don't bet and we have the best hand, it's going to get checked behind. Now we missed a bet if this guy was willing to call one more bet, which most people are on the river in a limit game.
Yeah, I'm definitely betting out, and if this guy hit perfect to beat me, I'm just gonna call and see what happens. But I'm definitely betting here on my 65. That's a huge hand in Raz, especially since he had a 9 and an 8 showing the whole way.
Yeah, third best. It's kind of like a jack high straight flush, right?
Yeah, we'll never know, I guess.
All right, so our hero does bet out. He gets raised.
Wow, check raised. Wow.
All right, so I was just getting ready to say our hero just calls, but he doesn't. He re-raises.
Oh, that's bad.
He wants to know whether that's a stupid raise.
Well, I don't like to call anybody in the Ante Up Nation stupid. But I think that you're only going to
check raise
with a better hand there.
Let's call it an emotional raise.
Yeah, how about that?
You're in the heat of the moment. A heat of the moment raise.
Yeah, blinded by passion. I would have just called there because you're only getting check raised on the river with a number one or a number two wheel or something. So I can't possibly think I'm way better than this guy that I could raise again. So I'm just calling. Wow. So what happens then?
All right, but he raised. The villain calls and shows 6-5 for deuce ace. Pipped us.
Oh.
Takes down a 3,000 chip pot.
Oh.
Rough.
Oh,
rough.
Man.
Rough. And we have yet another person willing to swear off Raz.
Well, I just got one thing to say. Raz happens.
Boy, that's our fourth t-shirt today.
We're going to be rich!
The Christmas season's coming up, and it's going to be a good one for us.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, I think I would have folded on 4th Street with the Queen, and then I would not have re-raised on the end there. And Wow, that's too bad. Yeah, that's why rads are so tough. You know, you can have a great hand and catch a high card, and it doesn't improve your hand. That's what sucks about it. So you got to know when to get out.
Brutal.
Sorry, man.
All right. Well, Jay Herkey, you'll be happy to know that at least you got a shot at practicing more with Raz with a $10 online staking package from our good folks at getastake.com. And so enjoy that. I would highly recommend that you don't waste it on Raz. That's just me.
Oh, my God. It used to be our crying call, man. It used to be our, you know, the slogan of the show. Now all we do is diss it. Man. All right, well, we want to thank Dr. Stephen Bloomfield for coming on the show today. And I want to thank Scott Long for losing to me in Apes.
Sure thing, buddy. Anything for you.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.